From the campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country. Here's your host, Scott Bertram.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome into another edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. On this episode, we'll talk with Matt Meehan from Hillsdale in D.C. about patriotism as a virtue. Tyler O'Neill will discuss his brand new book, Making Hate Pay, about the Southern Poverty Law Center. Fred Janiga from Hillsdale's German department will tell us why students, young students, should learn a foreign language. And Brita Stoneman from Hillsdale's Rhetoric and Public Address department takes us inside an essay she wrote on George Santayana. We're joined now by Matt Meehan, Director of Academic Programs and Worsham Teaching Fellow at the Kirby Center in Hillsdale in D.C. Matt, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
I want to talk to you about the virtue of patriotism, an issue I know you've spent some time thinking about recently. Patriotism is not always included in philosophical or religious lists of virtues. So what, in your mind, makes patriotism a virtue?
So it's actually a subset of justice, giving to each what they're due and doing no harm. But giving what's owed, there's a number of different sort of people that we're in debt to. And we, in justice, have to honor them, thank them, even serve them in whatever way we can when they do us great favors, especially excellent things. And, you know, we talk about the virtue of religion is recognizing that God gives us being and government. So thanks. In him we live and move and have our being, says St. Paul to the Athenians in the Acts of the Apostles, right? And that means we have to, you know, worship God and thank him. But, okay, that's one type of, and the big type of, being in government. He governs the entire world with nature's laws and the laws of religion. But there's piety, because we get our being and our government from our parents.
Mm-hmm.
They teach us how to live, and they make us, you know, thanks. And then, but the other thing we get is patriotism. So religion to God is that kind of debt and thanks, and then piety to our parents. But then there's also patriotism. And in older traditional sort of, you know, Aristotelian virtue ethics up through the Christian tradition, patriotism is a named and meditated upon virtue. It's like you've got to practice the virtue of patriotism.
So if we do practice the virtue of patriotism, what do we as patriotic citizens owe our country?
So first and foremost, thanks, right? And then what does thanks? Gratitude is the sort of foundation for, okay, that means I'm grateful because I've been given something great. And you actually are essentially put in a position of a debtor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you gave me this country, these freedoms, these laws, these paved roads, this water treatment plant, right? You've done a lot of things, right, that of government. And that spur in and of itself, just recognizing it in speech to yourself, to your family, to your friends, right, pledging allegiance to the flag, speaking in a sort of a reverent way about founding fathers and people who've done great and honorable deeds of service and fallen in battle. Those things actually are part of the service. The old word was cultus, right? The cult of personality, the not the bad kind,
mm-hmm.
the sort of socialist Marxist sort, but of, you know, actually I care about this person and I want to talk about them. George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, actual founding fathers who dedicated, died, suffered. Doing that will spur you to imitation.
Is there a benefit for those who practice the virtue of patriotism?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. All virtue, right, leads to wisdom and happiness, because living in accord with this truth of gratitude and debt is actually going to make you a more reasonable person. You're going to realize your position in the whole cosmos and act accordingly,
mm-hmm.
with less folly, right? Less tragedy, more comedy.
Where's the line, or is there a line to be drawn between patriotism, as you've described it, but also recognizing and realizing there have been problems, mistakes, things that have not been 100% A-plus in the country's history?
Yeah, that's right. I think you have to speak about them. The truth is important, and if you sort of say there's, you know, everything was great, be quiet, like you slip into some sort of weird, almost sort of Mother Russia, you know, Soviet propagandist. But the way in which you do it is a great, an art, right, frankly, of a free people. The art of patriotism, too, is, look, I'm a father. My sons and daughters see my failings, right? But then you have to school them when they're like, Dad, you didn't do X the way you said we should. You're like, thank you, but you probably shouldn't say it out loud in front of all the littles. Right? Maybe you say it to me privately or, you know, there's a way that you do something that in the Old Testament, it was called covering Noah's nakedness. Hmm. Right, the great story in Genesis, Noah, who's this very virtuous, good guy, he winds up sort of either inventing wine or fermenting wine after the flood recedes when they're starting over, and he gets drunk. And kind of so drunk that he's sort of lying around naked in his house, like passed out. Well, his youngest son winds up, Cham is his name, his youngest son sees it, laughs, comes out, and just starts ripping his dad to his brothers. And just says, he's drunk, look at this clown. Dad's such a goofball, what a fool, et cetera, et cetera. The two brothers see that that's not the wrong way to handle it. They go back into the tent. And without looking at their father, because they don't want to examine his failure, they cover him with a blanket by walking backwards to him and cover his nakedness. When Noah wakes up, he winds up praising Sem and Jephthah, who were the good sons who covered his nakedness, even though they were not unaware.
Mm-hmm.
They were delicate about how they talked about his flaws. He then curses not Cham, but he winds up cursing his son, Canaan. So the grandson, he says, your son, my son's son, your son, Cham, he's going to be a slave in the home of others. He's going to be a servant as opposed to a son, right? We are sons and daughters of the United States of America and sons and daughters of God.
Matt Meehan with us, Director of Academic Programs at the Kirby Center, Hillsdale in D.C., talking about the virtue of patriotism. You mentioned this right at the top of the conversations. You see, patriotism is kind of an outgrowth of justice. How does virtue of patriotism connect to other virtues as well?
Well, insofar as you learn from the sort of practice of patriotism, how to talk about people who've given you good things, you, in a certain sense, you learn the habit of friendship. So, right, your friends have flaws. If you exacerbate and talk about them a lot, you'll actually wind up, you know, even good friends can't handle that for long.
Right, right.
Right, it'll break apart. But rather than admit, right, your weakness and their weakness, but then double down on admitting the good things that are there and focusing on that, drowning it in an abundance of good, you wind up being radically critical. And that's, in one sense, the virtue of patriotism seems weird to so many people today because the sort of Marxist critical spirit of the 20th century, and before the 1800s as well, is so infected everybody that real truth, real charity, real friendship, real wisdom is, I have a great critique of X, Y, and Z, and you can see I can destroy everything. It's like, maybe that's actually immature.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like step two. Step one is love and respect and study and learn. Step two is be able to see the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Right.
Step three is put it back together in careful love, trying to be the best you can be with others. So it winds up helping you build the culture, right, of friendship in the city. So this critiquing of the founders and this ripping on our forefathers, and everybody's getting second-guessed in the nastiest ways and every flaw is being exploded, that's actually causing us to lose the habits of friendship in our nation.
Mm-hmm. Matt Meehan, Director of Academic Programs, Worsham Teaching Fellow at the Kirby Center, Hillsdale in D.C., Matt, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks very much.
Up next, we talk with writer and Hillsdale alum Tyler O'Neill about his new book, Making Hate Pay, concerning the Southern Poverty Law Center. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We're joined by Tyler O'Neill, the senior editor at PJ Media, and also author of the new book, Making Hate Pay, The Corruption of the Southern Poverty Law Center. And he's a Hillsdale College graduate back in 2012. Tyler, thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure, Scott.
So the Southern Poverty Law Center, people might see it abbreviated, of course, SPLC. Give people an overview of what the organization is.
Yeah, so the SPLC was founded as a civil rights organization. They originally protected poor people in the South. They represented people who were on death row and got them off, and they got the first black legislators elected in Alabama since Reconstruction by changing the redistricting laws. So they achieved some good stuff early on, but over the past few decades, various forms of corruption really set in and changed this civil rights organization into a threat to free speech in America. And, you know, they've been racked with a racial discrimination and sexual harassment scandal, and they've been sued by at least 11 different groups claiming defamation and various other harms that they've brought about. And former employees have actually come forward stating their complicity in the con of exaggerating hate and branding political opponents as hate groups, bilking donors to cut huge checks. And the book is called Making Hate Pay because the SPLC has a nearly $500 million endowment and offshore accounts in the Cayman Islands.
The subhead of the book, The Corruption, implies that it once was good. You just outlined some things that SPLC did in the past that were very good. How and, in your opinion, why did that change?
Yeah, so you can see from the case of Morris Pease that, you know, he's the co-founder of the SPLC, and he started the organization doing these small ball good cases that really made a big impact for civil rights. But he also, you know, has family history with the Ku Klux Klan, and he received some threats from the Ku Klux Klan, and then he shifted the organization into an attack position against the Klan. And of course, the Ku Klux Klan is the historic American hate group. So there, you know, it was noble of him perhaps to fight the Klan, but the staffers at the SPLC, his entire legal team, with the exception of Deese himself, actually resigned because they thought that this focus on the Klan really got in the way of the good work that they were doing. But Deese was a consummate salesman and fundraiser, so he focused on the Klan for, among other things, the fundraising potential, and indeed, they raked in the cash by attacking the Klan. And when the Klan and other groups were sued to bankruptcy, they needed new targets. So they found other forms of quote-unquote hate to associate with the Klan. And now, as of 2018, they have a hate group list plotting 1,020 groups across the U.S. But many of those groups not only are just organizations the SPLC disagrees with, some of them are defunct, maybe one or two people. There is a Confederate memorabilia shop that landed on the hate group list.
Tyler, people watch or listen to the mainstream media. They no doubt have heard stories in which the Southern Poverty Law Center is referred to as an authority figure, especially the lists you discussed. This book is by far the most in-depth, but you've written previously on this for PJ Media. Others have broached this subject as well. If this is relatively well known, why do media members continue to give the SPLC authority?
Yeah, I believe it has to do with their bias. The SPLC is a very useful source. It gives a veneer of respectability to baseless attacks that really slander people's good names. And the media and corporate America and big tech, and I mean Democrats in Congress and the Senate, routinely refer to the SPLC in order to bolster their arguments against the other side and really push down and silence their critics. So the SPLC is a useful tool, and it's quite shameful, to be honest, to see them refer continuously to this organization even after its racism and sexism scandal last March.
Tyler O'Neill with us, Making Hate Pay, the book, The Corruption of the Southern Poverty Law Center, talking here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. These lists, or the list the SPLC has published and put out there, what's been the fallout, what's been the consequences for some of the organizations who are wrongly placed upon this list?
Yeah, so there's been a lot. Senate Democrats on the floor of the Senate, Al Franken in particular, has compared the Alliance Defending Freedom to Pol Pot, the Cambodian dictator. But it's got real concrete harms as well. Amazon has a charity platform called Amazon Smile, mm-hmm. and they've kicked off every quote-unquote hate group from there. But Discover and MasterCard have even pressured some organizations to stop accessing donations through credit cards to some of these organizations. And Google's YouTube platform considers the SPLC to be a trusted flagger. And there's a push among charity, you know, there are these donor-advised funds to cut off all organizations that the SPLC considers hate groups. And it's just this growing movement of trying to silence organizations because the SPLC targets them. And actually, this past January, the SPLC, you know, an SPLC spokesman testified before Congress asking big tech and the government to go after quote-unquote hate groups because of the threat of white supremacist terrorism.
Tyler O'Neill with us. Making Hate Pay is the book. You mentioned Morris Dees, the founder, was fired from the organization last year after some allegations of impropriety. Is there an opportunity here for the SPLC to rebrand itself? Can they get back to what they once were? Is it an organization worth saving at this point?
I think they had an opportunity and they refused to take it. They hired Tina Chen, who was Michelle Obama's former chief of staff, to do an internal review. And recently they announced a new president who they've taken from Amnesty International, which also is an organization that has fought for noble causes, but has been very corrupted into a liberal direction to demonize, you know, Western governments that provide a lot of human rights and defend a lot of human rights for their people while overlooking the sins of, you know, far worse regimes outside the West and really carrying water for some of them.
Tyler O'Neill, you can read his stuff at PJ Media, where he is senior editor, and the new book is available now, Making Hate Pay, The Corruption of the Southern Poverty Law Center. Tyler, also a 2012 graduate here at Hillsdale College. Tyler, thank you so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Yeah, my pleasure, Scott. Glad to be here.
Up next, Fred Janica from Hillsdale's German department tells us why it's a good idea for young students to learn a foreign language. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
I like a bed that's really firm.
I need something a little softer than that.
Rest easy. With the Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed, you can both adjust your comfort with your Sleep Number setting.
Can it really help me fall asleep faster?
Yes, by gently warming your feet.
Okay, but can it help keep us asleep?
It senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you effortlessly comfortable. Sleep Number, proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. Don't miss our New Year's special. The Queen Sleep Number 360 C2 Smart Bed is only $899, plus special financing, only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com. Special financing subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. See store for details.
At Golden Valley Bank, our mission is to create a truly unique local banking experience. We understand how important it is to be known and heard by your bank. That's why we take the time to connect with you and the community you live in. When you bank with us, we put your money back into our community by supporting local nonprofits who provide services for those that need it most. Golden Valley Bank, a bank built for business, a bank built for community, a bank built for you. Learn more at goldenvalley.bank. Member FDIC.
The Backo and Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. The Backo and Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Tobacco and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
This is Reading Electric Utility Director Dan Beans. REU is proud to be part of the economic relief to our customers during this difficult time. All REU customers are receiving $250 in credits on their City of Reading utility accounts. In the near future, commercial customers will have the ability to make monthly payments on their outstanding utility account balance for up to 24 months with no interest. REU and the Chamber of Commerce are proud to work together to assist commercial customers as we move forward. Visit readingchamber.com or cityofreading.org for more information or questions related to this important local effort.
Where do you go in Shasta County to get advice on the best type of firearm to meet your needs and how to safely carry and use it? The answer is to join the revolution at locally owned Bastiani Arms. Bastiani Arms believes in a better way to serve their customers and providing them with all the information needed to make the right decisions before and after the sale. They have a large selection of guns and ammunition and always special discounts for veterans. Self-protection is your right. Join the revolution at Bastiani Arms, 2539 Larkspur Lane in Reading, 222-8222.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Thank you to all our listeners in Traverse City, Michigan, tuning in on WJNL 101.3 FM. Thanks for listening to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Joined by Dr. Fred Yonaga, Associate Professor of German and Chair of the German Department at Hillsdale College. Dr. Yonaga, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Talking today about the importance of learning a foreign language. I learned Spanish when I was in college and high school. I went to Mexico, actually, the summer after I finished my seventh year of Spanish, so it was the perfect time to actually use it. Unfortunately, I would have to admit I've lost a good bit of it in the time since then. So let's talk. Why should someone learn a foreign language?
Well, obviously, the immediate goal to learn a foreign language is to use it, like you said, Scott.
Yeah.
And I think that our students, when they learn the foreign language, they love to go on study abroad programs. They love to prove to themselves that they can use this language actively. But I think even beyond that immediate goal of using the language actively, there are plenty of other reasons to learn a foreign language. I always say to my students, words have meaning, and the more words that we have, the more meaning that we're able to produce, to assemble in our world. And that goes not only for our English language, but for other foreign languages that we accumulate through our lives as well. They add to that vocabulary that we have. They add to that ability to express mm-hmm. our ideas. And in so reality, the more language we have, the more access to ideas that we have.
Is there a good time or a perfect time to begin learning a foreign language?
I think that the best time is, of course, when the learner is younger, because the brain is more supple and can absorb that language more naturally. We see that children learn foreign languages very quickly, very easily. My own children grew up bilingually. They never even knew that they were learning a foreign language.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, this is what we speak when we're here. This is what we speak when we're somewhere else. When we're in school, we speak English. When we're at home, we speak German. With grandma and grandpa, we speak English. With mom and dad, we speak German. They never really even realized the difference. And so they grew up accepting, tolerating, loving, and being able to express themselves in both languages.
I know there's been a lot of work science into research, the brain science, what learning a foreign language does for the brain. What have we found?
I teach a language pedagogy class here, and I always tell the students that, you know, there's a lot happening when we're teaching and learning these foreign languages inside the brain itself. Adult learners are, you know, they're different than children. Most of our students would qualify as adult learners. They're 18, 19 years old. But what's happening there is that they're actually learning the language, and they're storing in their brain this language in a different area than they ever learned their mother tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does is amazing, because it accesses parts of the brain that haven't been used in this way before. And it opens up doors. It opens up doors of creativity. Often it opens up doors of intellectual and emotional intelligence that they may not have accessed in the same way before. And we're finding out more and more in kind of neurological science studies that the brain responds to this usage in a very positive way. For example, we're finding out that brain diseases like Alzheimer's are showing up much later in bilingual speakers or people who have learned a foreign language than in people who speak only one language. And so that's a great benefit. The brain is being used. The brain responds positively, and the brain remains healthy.
Do you see in students who are taking foreign languages here at Hillsdale a change? What I mean by that is, when I was in grade school and I was born in 1980, we started Spanish, I think, in sixth grade, and it was kind of unusual to be doing it at that point. These days, it seems more of an expectation that students are learning a foreign language, certainly in high school, likely in college. Have you seen a shift in that way?
In America, it's always a political and economical decision for school districts to offer a foreign language.
Mm-hmm.
And frequently what we see is that foreign languages are the first that are cut out of a curriculum. They seem to be expendable in our American education system. That's unfortunate. It's just a political and economic reality. In Europe and other places in the world, foreign languages are simply standard. It's not even a question that you'll learn a second foreign language when you're in elementary school, and you'll be adding to that second with a third foreign language by the time you're of high school age. So most of our peer group throughout the world is speaking two or three languages where we're only speaking one. Now, our Hillsdale crowd typically has access to a lot more education
mm-hmm.
than many Americans do, and so you see a lot of students coming with a lot of advanced foreign language training, and that's really great, and that's a huge benefit to us here.
Dr. Fred Janiger with us, Associate Professor of German, Chair of the German Department here at Hillsdale. So, okay, Hillsdale, Latin, Greek, Spanish, French, and German. So what's your best sales pitch? Why, if you're going to choose among those languages, why should a student choose to learn German?
Well, first of all, to say our programs in Latin and Greek and French and Spanish are wonderful, and they do a great job, and I have great colleagues and wonderful students in all of those disciplines. We also share students
sure.
between these disciplines. So some of my very best students come from classics departments where they've already learned Latin and Greek, and then the German grammar isn't so daunting to them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so to your question exactly, why German?
Yeah, but why is German the best, really?
Well, aside from, you know, wonderful faculty, but German has a position in the world right now. It certainly is a world language. It's quickly becoming the second most popular language on the Internet, believe it or not. It's a language in sciences and always has been, and obviously it's a driving force in the economy in
mm-hmm.
Europe. What we're seeing more and more in recent times, it used to be everyone would say, oh, the Germans all speak English, I don't need to learn German. Well, that's still true. They do speak English. However, we find that there's a national sense of pride in Germany. When visitors come, they truly appreciate someone who has taken the time to learn their language. And when you do, you have access to knowledge, to contacts, relationships that you don't have in English in the same way. And I'll give you an example. My wife works in international logistics. She speaks German fluently. She studied in Austria. And she has contact with Germany nearly every day. In her business, everyone says that they've had a foreign language. They've
mm-hmm.
all studied a foreign language. But no one truly speaks that foreign language with fluency. And so when they have a guest come from Germany, a customer, when she's on the phone conducting business in German, people's jaws drop.
Mm.
And her boss notices. and people start to take note. And she becomes known as the expert for this region of the world, which is incredibly productive.
Speaking of translations, if you learn and master the German language, what great works, great books, literature can be read in the native tongue? Are there some that you specifically teach in your classes?
Well, I mean, first and foremost is Goethe, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. He's the classical German example, 18th and 19th century. He wrote the work Faust, which we read here in our Great Books program. I would recommend that to all students. Faust is simply the travel of a man through knowledge, learning about himself, learning about the world, learning about God, and then doing it. Mm. And that's a fantastic story. And to read that in German, to read that in Goethe's own words is invaluable. But even into the 20th century, Thomas Mann, I had a student here, a wonderful student who's now a PhD student at Stanford, who came to me as a freshman and said, I need to learn German because I need to read Thomas Mann. I need to read The Magic Mountain by Thomas Mann in German. And she did it.
Is there a preferred way, or do you have a way that you recommend for learning a foreign language through books? You know, the audio programs now, immersion. Is there a way, or is it really based on the individual person?
Everyone learns with their own set of tools. There's not one best way for everyone. It takes a lot of time to learn a foreign language, and motivation is a huge factor. Why am I learning this foreign language? Am I putting it to use as I'm learning it? So we try to create situations where students can do that. Still at a personal level, talking to other people, right? We learn a language to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And human beings are communication machines. We want to communicate. We were made to communicate. And to do it in a foreign language is satisfying in a way that few other disciplines in the academy are.
Dr. Fred Janiga, Associate Professor of German, Chair of the German Department, the best department, he says. The best foreign language department on the campus of Hillsdale College.
Natürlich.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
You're welcome.
Up next, Brita Stoneman from Hillsdale's Rhetoric and Public Address Department will talk about her recent essay for the George Santayana Society. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, this is Matt. I'm your host of Liberty Unabashed, a new show on Sundays 8 to 9. We're going to have some good music, some deep thought, and I hope you check us out.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on the Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is the second generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423 at Advanced Automotive.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts, Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson State of Mind.
Black Bear Diner is celebrating this fall with the craze you'll crave.
A craze I'll crave?
Yes. Cheesecake drizzled with pumpkin spice, praline sauce, and chopped pecans. Sip on a creamy pumpkin pie cold brew or savor pumpkin spice pancakes with maple butter for the perfect fall experience. now for a limited time only.
I'm craving it already.
Blackbear Diner has carryout, curbside pickup, and delivery options.
Start your order at blackbeardiner.com or visit them on site for an outdoor dining experience.
Black Bear Diner.
Hi, I'm Arielle Winter. If you're anything like me, your pets are not only your best friends, they're part of your family. American Humane, which has been rescuing animals like Cleo here for more than 100 years, has life-saving tips that can make a big difference in a disaster. When disaster strikes, you want to protect your whole family, including your pets. To help keep your family safe and help our best friends in their worst times, find tips at AmericanHumane.org.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertrand. Follow us on Twitter. Always know when a new episode is available. We're there at Hillsdale Radio. We're joined by Dr. Brita Stoneman, Professor of Rhetoric and Public Address at Hillsdale College. Dr. Stoneman, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we're talking with you today because you had a piece published in the Bulletin of the Santayana Society. So we have multiple things to talk about here. And the first, for many of our listeners, or at least some, might be, who is this person, George Santayana?
That's a great question, because a lot of people don't actually know who he is, or at least don't recognize that they know who he is. George Santayana was a Spanish-born American philosopher, and most people will remember him, even if they don't realize they remember him, because he's the guy who said those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. Or maybe the more often misattributed Plato quotation, only the dead have seen the end of war. He was born in 1863, died in 1952, and only spent his first 8 years in Spain, and then came to America, to Boston, with his family, where he spent 40 years, including attending Harvard for his undergrad, his graduate degree, and later became a professor. He spent the remainder of his life in Europe, despite many invitations to come back to America to teach at places like Columbia, and even repeated invitations to come back and teach at Harvard. But he really felt like American institutions like Harvard were becoming what he called too anti-humanist, emphasizing numbers over standards. He once actually recalled an anecdote when the then president of Harvard, Charles Eliot, asked Santayana how his class was going, and Santayana was excited and said, "It's going great. We're actually, you know, having some progress. We're going to be moving from Plato to Aristotle." And Eliot said, "No, you misunderstood me. I was actually asking how many people were enrolled in your class," which was probably disappointing to Santayana. Yeah. And he would probably be kind of horrified at how much that's, you know, these institutions nowadays have leaned into that anti-humanist stance, although Hillsdale probably wouldn't count as one of them, thankfully, right? He spent the rest of his life in Europe, where he wrote and thought and lived without any sort of academic or institutional constraints. He was a beautiful and prolific writer, a true man of letters, and not just in the academic sense, but in the literal sense, right? We have volumes of the letters that he wrote and corresponded with people, from everyday observations to deep philosophical inquiries. He wrote poetry. He wrote a novel, The Last Puritan, which was actually nominated for a Pulitzer Prize, an autobiography that got tons of accolades, and he was even on the cover of Time magazine in 1936.
And not one of those do-it-yourself covers.
It was a real time cover. He was an essayist, a cultural and literary critic, and a philosopher, right? But he didn't simply write about these things or within these topics and generic kind of constraints as a fragmented disciplinary system, right? Rather, he felt and he fully believed that philosophy, literature, poetry, and from my perspective, rhetoric, right, had a unified or what he might call a harmonious existence. And he also wrote a lot about aesthetics, which is what kind of prompted my initial interest in him. And I wrote my dissertation about him, trying to connect rhetoric and aesthetics through his works, initially reading his book called The Sense of Beauty in an Aesthetics Seminar.
I want to come back to the writing in just a moment, but you mentioned your dissertation was on Santayana. Your the quote on your faculty page at Hillsdale is also from Santayana, and I know you went into some of his background and why you find him interesting, but really, what is that thing that fascinates you about him?
The thing that fascinates me is that he really just sort of combines all of these various areas of interest, and he somehow manages to write really profound things about them. And this is why we quote him without knowing that it's him, right? He's just this quotable person because he's just this beautiful, eloquent, elegant writer, and he can talk about literature and poetry and, you know, he wrote volumes called The Realms of Being, right? These really deep, difficult ideas that he just was prolific, right? And so it's just this really incredible person, and at the same time, somebody that's dropped out of conversation. So it makes him really interesting. Like, what is going on with this guy here, right? And he was, at the time, with people like Dewey, right, whom we still remember.
Sure.
Really, you know, you mentioned Dewey, and everyone will know who that is, even if they don't know his ideas. But you mentioned Santayana, and they're like, who? So it's really this kind of interesting thing, which is why? Why did we forget this really great guy? And so it makes you want to read more, and then when you read him, it makes you want to read more, right?
Dr. Brita Stoneman with us, professor of rhetoric and public address here at Hillsdale College. Tell us about the essay, which made it into the bulletin of the Santayana Society. Now, people can find this, you know, it's online. They can go read the entire thing, but if you had to pick a few things out of this essay, Forming Harmony, Santayana's Rhetoric, what would you want people to take out of it?
Well, I think one of the things that they should take out of it is that we often think about rhetoric as simply the ends of persuasion, right? Or Aristotle would say the means to persuasion. But what Santayana offers us is a different sort of perspective about rhetoric, that we might find it harmonious, okay? And so one of the standout quotations that I found from him, which was actually in his book of poetry, strangely, he said, "Verse is a form of rhetoric, as is all speech and even thought, a means of pouring experience into a mold which fluid experience cannot supply, and of transmuting emotion into ideas by making it articulate." And this passage really got me thinking about traditional views of rhetoric and what might be missing from them, and how Santayana might offer some novel ways to consider rhetoric beyond those ends of persuasion, or at least only persuasion, because it certainly does have a place within rhetoric. And he doesn't really explicitly, or not very often at least, address rhetoric, but the way that he writes about things allows you to sort of tease out of him these connections, these rhetorical connections, at least in my opinion, and especially with his emphasis on beauty. And so this is why I started to explore these ideas more.
What do you think he means when he says that thought is rhetorical?
Right. So this is kind of interesting, right? But there are these things that we feel, right? These kernels of thought, some chaotic preconscious emotion, perhaps, that stirs up in us before we even utter any words. And we can rhetorically negotiate these instances within ourselves as they struggle to become coherent. Rhetoric can shape them so that they not only become articulate within ourselves, but when they're given form, they can be made articulate to others. This is what Santayana means, at least I think, for rhetoric to do, right? To give shape or form to thoughts, to ideas, to emotions, and to experiences, so that they can be articulated within oneself and then communicated to others.
We'll step back a little bit here and actually just get at a question I think people might be asking themselves, which is, what's the difference between just speech and rhetoric? What's the line we draw between those?
Right. So, I mean, you can say speech is, you know, language, right? That's something that we can symbolically express. And rhetoric certainly is related to that, right? We use language when we're talking about rhetoric. But when we're talking about rhetoric, we're also talking about something symbolically effective, right? Mm-hmm. There's some sort of end to it. So anybody can talk, right? But when we're talking about rhetoric, we're talking about it serving some sort of end. And usually that means for persuasion or influence, or that's what we usually talk about it in rhetorical studies. So when you hear mere rhetoric, you think of it as something empty or political, and
right.
that's not really what we're talking about either, although there's certainly some truth in that at times, too. But really what we're talking about is the difference for language being used for some effect, right? Some symbolic use of it.
Dr. Brita Stoneman, professor of rhetoric and public address at Hillsdale College. And again, her essay in the Bulletin of the Santayana Society, Forming Harmony, Santayana's Rhetoric, which you can find online. Dr. Stoneman, thanks for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
And that will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Matt Meehan from Hillsdale in D.C. talking about patriotism as a virtue. Tyler O'Neill, a Hillsdale alum, on his new book, Making Hate Pay. Fred Yonaga from Hillsdale's German Department. And Brita Stoneman from the Rhetoric and Public Address Department talking about her essay on George Santayana. Remember, you can hear new episodes of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour podcast. Find it at SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, or Spotify. Just search for the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. The assistant producer of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour is Griffin McAfee. To find out more about Hillsdale College, head to hillsdale.edu. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Make this year turtly awesome with the Turtle Bay membership. Get free access to world-class exhibits, exciting animal shows, towering playgrounds, and much more. Family memberships are just $90. That's less than $10 a month for a whole year of fun. Get yours today at turtlebay.org.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier in all we do.
Many accidents are caused by worn wiper blades. Let's face it, it's just uncomfortable when you're driving in the rain, snow, fog, and everything else in between with worn blades. At Premier Oil Change, when you buy one wiper blade, you get the second blade free. Yeah. Now through January 15th, you buy one wiper blade and get the second one free for as little as $14.99. At Premier Oil Change, we make maintaining your car easy. There's no need for an appointment, and you don't drop your car off or wait. Just pull in, enjoy a free beverage and free Wi-Fi while our trained technicians perform our comprehensive 30-point certified service. Earn free oil changes with Premier Rewards. Learn more at PremierOilChange.com or visit us in Palo Cedro. Premier is in the Holiday Market Shopping Center or in Redding on Lake Boulevard, next to Waterworks Park. And our newest location in Anderson, across from Round Table Pizza. All locations, you get a free car wash with every oil change. Home with a friendly oil change.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Don't give up on your tomorrow. At Shasta College, we're offering more 8-week compressed classes, more online support, and more financial aid to help with life, not just textbooks and tuition. Whether it's online or in person, we'll continue to teach, encourage, and inspire, just like we have for over 70 years. Spring classes start January 19th. Enroll at shastacollege.edu. Start your tomorrow today.
Explore your world right from home with Turtle Bay TV.
Daintree is a jungle carpet python.
Featuring free educational and distance learning content for a virtual experience the whole family will enjoy.
Welcome to the vault.
Start streaming now at turtlebay.org.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Some things in life you can just rely on, like the comfy fit of a favorite pair of jeans and the tried and true performance of a new home comfort system from Rood. So here's to reliability, built into everything we do. Rely on Rood.
Get reliable comfort when the weather turns cold with a new heating system installed by the local pros at Alliance Heating and Air. Call Alliance Heating and Air today at 530-221-2642.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. If you're 50 or older, now is the time to schedule this life-saving test. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%, so stop making excuses and get screened. This public service message is brought to you by Reading Endoscopy Center. Call them at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
Some things in life you can just rely on, like the comfy fit of a favorite pair of jeans and the tried and true performance of a new home comfort system from Rood. So here's to reliability, built into everything we do. Rely on Rood.
Get reliable comfort when the weather turns cold with a new heating system installed by the local pros at Alliance Heating and Air. Call Alliance Heating and Air today at 530-221-2642.
You know, it can be difficult to find a trustworthy, knowledgeable, and yet affordable auto repair shop. Advanced Automotive is the second generation, locally owned, full-service repair shop serving our community since 1993, and one of only four AAA-approved auto repair shops in the Reading area. Advanced Automotive has a goal, and it's to keep it simple to have safe, reliable vehicles for our customers and our community. Call or come by to meet the crew who is here to serve you. 244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
Dr. Farrell in Palisadro is now making dental work more affordable by offering a dental discount savings plan annual membership. The dental discount savings plan is simple, straightforward, and includes 20% off all treatment, such as emergency limited exams, restorative work, fillings, crowns, partials, bridges, dentures, and periodontal treatment, a comprehensive exam, oral cancer screening, a TMJ exam, a periodic exam, and two sets of x-rays, along with cleaning and two fluoride treatments. The program is a discount plan, not a dental insurance plan, and is only available at the office of Dr. Farrell. The Dental Discount Savings Plan annual membership provides immediate eligibility. No yearly maximum, no deductibles, no claims to submit, no limitations for pre-existing treatment, and no waiting periods. Children on the plan must be 15 years or younger. Some restrictions apply. Membership prices may vary. Contact Dr. Farrell, located at 9461 Deschutes Road, Suite 2 in Palisadro. Call 547-57 to make an appointment today. That's 547-5757.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Colonoscopy is the most effective method of screening for colon cancer and is the only procedure that can both detect and prevent cancer in one procedure. Take-home tests can miss up to 1 in 12 of colon cancers and most precancerous polyps. If you're 50 or older, now is the time to schedule this life-saving test. When caught early, the survival rate of colon cancer is 90%, so stop making excuses and get screened. This public service message is brought to you by Reading Endoscopy Center. Call them at 530-246-7000 or visit readingendoscopy.com.
Hi, this is Judy Maxwell. Life can happen in an instant. Sometimes you plan for it, like retirement or taking care of your family. Sometimes it's a surprise, like a winter storm with home or property damage. Sometimes it may be an unexpected accident or illness or even a premature death. Whatever life throws at you, you'll wish you had gotten the right insurance when you had the chance. That's where Maxwell Insurance can help. For more than a quarter century, we've been serving the North State because it's our home, too. Give us a call at 221-0.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.